The International Criminal Court issues an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin
for the alleged war crimes of deportation of children from Ukrainian-occupied territories into the Russian Federation.
Plus, Ukraine's former president gives his view of the state of the war in an exclusive interview with VOA.
The real purpose, the real goal of Russia, and the reason why the whole world has a food crisis. Because Russia tried to weaponize everything.
And later in the program, forced to leave their homes, Ukrainian ballet dancers who fled to the Netherlands are finding their footing again. Today is Friday, March 17th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. The International Criminal Court Friday issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin for war crimes because of his alleged involvement in abductions of children from Ukraine. ICC President Judge Pyotr Hofmansky made the announcement in a video statement.
Today, 17th of March 2023, the International Criminal Court has issued two warrants of arrest in the Ukraine situation. For Vladimir Putin, President of the Russian Federation, and for Maria Lvova-Belova, Commissioner of the Russian President for Children's Rights, for the alleged war crimes of deportation of children from Ukrainian-occupied territories into the Russian Federation. It is forbidden by international law for occupied powers to transfer civilians from the territory they live in to other territories. Children enjoy special protection under the Geneva Convention. The contents of the warrants are secret in order to protect victims. The ICC attaches great importance to the protection of victims, especially children. Nevertheless, the judges of the chamber dealing with this case decided to make the existence of the warrants public in the interest of justice and to prevent the commission of future crimes. This is an important moment in the process of justice before the ICC. The judges have reviewed the information and evidence submitted by the prosecutor and determined that there are credible allegations against these persons for the alleged crimes. The ICC is doing its part of work. As a court of law, the judges issued arrest warrants. Their execution depends on international cooperation.
This comes as a UN commission investigating possible Russian human rights abuses and violations in Ukraine released its first report on Thursday. I spoke with Marie Struthers, Amnesty International Director for Eastern Europe and Central Asia, about their investigations of potential violations of international humanitarian laws, including the deportation of Ukrainian children.
We published a report in November of last year, exactly on the issue of forcible transfers. And in that report, we documented a number of cases of civilians of all ages being forcibly transferred from Ukraine to Russian-occupied territories or Russia, including children. So we're continuing to work on the issue, but we don't have, at least officially for now, additional cases further to our report of November of last year. But I can say with certainty that it is a top issue for the Ukrainian authorities right now, and we're hoping to gather more documentation on it ourselves. The Ukrainian authorities, I believe, Lori, put forward the number of about 100,000 transferred. Those are not Amnesty numbers, but I believe those are the Ukrainian government numbers. It's very much an issue.
Since the beginning of the conflict, we understand that Amnesty International has been documenting war crimes. I have a twofold question. What constitutes international war crime, and what are some examples of what we know has happened and is still happening in Ukraine?
We've been systematically documenting very grave violations of what is called international humanitarian law, or in more colloquial language, the laws of war, since not only Lurie, the 24th of February, 1 year ago, but indeed since 2014, when Russia illegally annexed and occupied Crimea for one and for two very solidly backed Russian proxies in the eastern part of Ukraine called the Donbass. So there has been a war ongoing since 2014, and it escalated to a whole new level 1 year ago. Some examples of these very egregious violations that have been committed vastly by Russian forces are extrajudicial executions, deadly strikes, and systematic, I might add, on civilian infrastructure, forcible deportations and transfers of civilians to Russian-occupied territory or to Russia proper, and killings committed on a vast scale through the shelling of cities. Now, as to what constitutes war crimes, that's always for the courts, Lurie, to determine. But we can say with a fair amount of certainty ourselves, because we've been documenting systematically, as have other bodies like the United Nations, like the International Criminal Court, these types of crimes that I've just listed have been documented by all of these bodies. They will be labeled officially in the courts as war crimes, but we have sufficient, quite a bit of confidence, given that our documentation is systematic and quite deep level, to assume that they are war crimes. Crimes against humanity can be several of the crimes I've listed, but they have to carry a characteristic that is aimed at a particular population. So if we speak about, for example, forcible transfers, we have not ourselves documented the forcible transfer of thousands of children from Ukraine to Russia proper, where some have been adopted or taken into families. But that could be eventually considered a crime against humanity, because it carries the characteristic of targeting a particular group, which in this case is children. And very sadly, we're seeing no let up in this systematic pattern of the Russian forces attacking civilian infrastructure, leaving civilians without power, leaving children without the possibility to go regularly to schools, because schools have also been systematically targeted by missile strikes, as have health facilities, even homes for older people. So sadly, we're seeing no let up in this strategy, it seems to us, to terrorize the civilian population. We obviously are calling for accountability for all perpetrators of these crimes, but our call is for victims to be placed at the center of all justice efforts. Victims need their voices to be heard in these accountability processes, and they need to be able to receive compensation and reparation. And I say this because Ukraine is facing a situation that any country anywhere in the world would find absolutely staggering. As we speak, the office of the Ukrainian General Prosecutor has collated over 70,000 cases that can be prosecuted. And of course, the number is going to grow.
While we know a lot still remains unknown, will it take years to know the full extent of the crimes committed in Ukraine? And is it realistic to think that there will be true accountability?
It's an excellent question. As you said, the war rages as we speak. So kudos to the Ukrainian judicial authorities, who, as I said before, are collating at least 70,000 cases that can be prosecuted. And kudos to the investigators on the ground and the judges and the lawyers. But it's a formidable task for any country, even in a peacetime situation, to face these numbers and to face them while the war is raging is an added level of complexity. So just imagine collecting evidence in areas where you don't know if a missile is going to strike, or the front line is going to approach in 2 days, where you have to evacuate people because the conflict is looming closer. All of that to say, it's an enormous challenge to be able to conduct with the necessary level of professionalism professionalism and equipment, forensic exhumations. If one discovers a mass grave, you've got to have the necessary experts and equipment on hand to be able to certify whether a particular person has died as a result of torture or as a result of lack to adequate medical support. And that, again, is challenging in any situation, but even doubly more challenging when the war is raging all around you. In terms of what we can expect on the level of accountability, the international architecture of justice is a very robust and solid one, but indeed, as you were alluding, it can be extremely slow and lead to accountability for only a handful of individuals. And we very much applaud the rapid response of the International Criminal Court, the United Nations. There are various bodies, both at the national level and international, that have responded generously and quickly. But we're calling for as many alternative mechanisms to be explored so that greater numbers of Ukrainian victims can have access to reparation and compensation and accountability than not, because we know in previous such conflicts, only a handful of perpetrators after years are brought to justice. And it would be a great pity if that was to be repeated in the case of Ukraine.
Marie Struthers, Amnesty International Director for Eastern Europe and Central Asia, thank you so much for speaking with us. China's leader will travel to Moscow in an apparent show of support for Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Xi Jinping will visit Russia from Monday to Wednesday amid sharpening East-West tensions over the conflict in Ukraine. Russia's ongoing invasion of Ukraine is expected to dominate discussions. China has sought to project itself as neutral in the conflict, even while in 2022 Beijing declared it had a no-limits friendship with Russia and has refused to condemn Moscow's invasion. The Kremlin says next week's visit will take place at the invitation of Vladimir Putin. On Thursday, China's foreign minister told his Ukrainian counterpart Beijing's concerned about the year-old conflict spinning out of control and is urging talks on a political solution. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A United Nations brokered deal that Ukraine and Russia struck last year to allow grain shipments from Black Sea ports is due to expire Saturday, although negotiators are working on a 120-day extension. VOA's Mykhailo Komendovsky spoke with former Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko about the grain deal.
The whole world is waiting for the grain deal to be extended. It's one of out of not many, if not the only, agreement with the Russian Federation that seems to be working. Seems to be working. The United Nations and Turkey say that talks continue, and Ukraine rejected a Russian push for a reduced, like, 60-day renewal, offering a 120-day one instead. From your point of view, how fragile is this agreement?
First of all, everybody should understand the real purpose, the real goal of Russia, and the reason why the whole world has a food crisis. Because Russia tried to weaponize everything. Food, energy, and everything else which is under their influence. With this situation, I have absolutely clear that we should thank the United Nations for motivation. We should thank Turkey, and I definitely support the position of Ukraine for extending the minimum term when we should agree minimum at 120 days. Second position with the Black Sea Grain Initiative, this is the official name of this project, is that Ukraine should demonstrate absolutely openness and transparency with accountability with the access to the grain corridor of all the Ukrainian producers, because everybody should be completely sure that the access to the grain corridor is free and support fighting of the world against hunger and support Ukrainian ability to make an influence on this hunger. And with that situation, I keep my fingers crossed that our unity, together with the whole democratic world, United Nations, Turkey, will definitely bring the results.
Briefly, do you see anything that may affect the weaponry flow from the Western allies to Ukraine?
This is definitely the sweet dream of Mr. Putin. And definitely we shouldn't give him any tiny chance to implement this dream. The fact which surprised the world and surprised the Putin and from the very first day of the wild-scale attack was unity in Ukraine. We demonstrate, including my team demonstrate, from the first hours since 24th of February. And now the global unity, global solidarity with Ukraine and total and complete isolation of Russia, this is also the key factor for the sustainable security situation on the continent, is a key factor for our victory, is a key factor for our peace. Many of my team, many of my close friends now is in Bakhmut. And this is direct message I want to deliver to you from them. You have a lack of ammunition. And any delay of ammunition supply, any delay of the armed personnel carrier, air defense, long-range artillery, a long-range missile, any suspend would not affect it only on the April counter-offensive operation. But this is the fact which Ukraine pay very high price in Bakhmut on the whole front line now. Please, let's do our best to accelerate the supply. And I am very much welcome today's initiative in United States Senate, bipartisan initiative, who demand to accelerate the supply and increase the volumes. This is vital.
Former Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko speaking with VOA's Mikhail Komodovsky. Be sure to tune in on Monday for part two of the interview and Poroshenko's view of how his former political rival, President Volodymyr Zelensky, is handling the war. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Lithuania, a country that sees itself as directly threatened by Russia, has warned for decades of Russian aggression against its neighbors. Now, Lithuanians worry that what's happening in Ukraine could also happen there. Ricardo Markina reports from the Lithuanian capital of Vilnius that ordinary people are keeping up grassroots efforts to support their homeland. Jonathan Speer narrates.
On the outskirts of Vilnius, men volunteer to build stoves out of old car tires. These portable stoves are going to travel to Ukraine, where they will be an essential support in the last weeks of winter. Vacheslavas Miskarvechus is one of the promoters of this initiative. 50% is aimed for the military, he says, and the rest is for the people who lost their house and live somewhere in the barn or live where there is a root cellar available, so it will go for them. These men who work in their spare time with their own tools and finance the delivery of the stoves to Ukraine are just one example of Lithuania's willingness to continue supporting Ukraine 1 year after the start of the war. Lithuanian direct aid to Kyiv amounts to more than $700 million, of which $257 million are military aid. The UN says 75,000 Ukrainians currently live in Lithuania, which ensures that the majority of refugees get their own homes. Lithuania's government is promoting the aid program as a nationwide grassroots effort. Lithuania's economy is classified as middle income, on par with that of EU partners like Spain or Portugal, offering opportunities to a group of refugees more inclined to look for work rather than live on charity. That, observers say, has helped Lithuanians maintain their willingness to keep helping as the war drags into a second year. Another mitigating factor is that many Ukrainians speak Russian. Another type of refugee has found a home among the halls of Lithuanian museums. Ukrainian-owned artworks were sent here to escape Russian bombing and looting, like in the Kherson Museum. Edmundas Jakalitis is a well-known Lithuanian journalist who is promoting this initiative.
When Ukrainians came back, they saw that in National Museum of Kherson, there was no any painting. They have stolen everything.
Other works by Ukrainian artists have also found their home here, some coming straight from the front. Arunas Gelunas, director of the National Museum, shows us the works brought from Ukraine.
We had like 20 icons painted on the boxes meant for bullets. Can you imagine that?
A year of horror. The worst conflict in Europe since the Second World War has given way to a second. On the streets of Lithuania, there is yet no sign of fatigue. For Ricardo Marquina in Vilnius, Jonathan Speer, VOA News.
60 Ukrainian ballet dancers fled Ukraine to escape Russia's invasion over the past year. They ended up in the Netherlands, where they continue to dance together. Maria Lianovska has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
These five dozen dancers from Ukraine were forced to leave their homeland after Russia invaded. Today they make their home in the Netherlands, where they formed the United Ukrainian Ballet Company, and then embarked on a world tour that included a stop in Washington. For some, like Mikita Potapchuk, these were their first performances after ballet school.
I had to grow up very fast. Back in Kyiv, I lived with my parents. And when I had to leave Ukraine, I got to visit over 20 countries in a year. It was such a sudden change. But I'm getting used to it.
Maxim Belokrinitsky, who danced with the National Opera of Ukraine, found himself in the Kyiv region in the first days of Russia's invasion.
For a month, we lived a very tough life, and I realized I couldn't go on like that. I decided to leave. There was no work. The theater wasn't working then.
Before the war, Dmytro Borodai also danced with the National Opera of Ukraine. After Russia invaded, he traveled west from Kyiv on foot.
We decided to just walk towards Khmelnytsky. So that's what we did. A couple of times we got picked by cars passing by. But in general, it was pure survival.
The idea to unite Ukrainian ballet dancers from across the country into one company came from Dutch ballerina Igona de Jong.
At the time, I was dancing with two Ukrainian stars from the Kyiv National Opera. And when the war started, they were in Holland with me. And then through them, I heard all these stories of their colleagues and friends in these horrible situations. And then I thought, I want to try and help as many people as I can.
Many of the dancers never imagined they would end up in The Hague, let alone continue to perform and go on world tours.
I was going to go to France for a tour. I didn't take anything with me, just some winter clothes.
Despite never having worked together, dancers say they come together with something in common.
They all, and myself and my wife, our families are in Ukraine. So it's constant worry. Every morning starts with checking the news. Just to make sure that your loved ones are okay. That's hard.
And no words speak louder than the beauty and sincerity of the ballet that these different artists with one shared story made happen. For Maria Ulyanovska, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.